Case 21-3524, United States of America versus Christopher Bryant. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Shad, you may proceed for the appellant when ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm here this morning representing Christopher Bryant, and I have reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal in this case.
All right.
So this case is fairly straightforward. The police in this case used a mere allegation from an informant that they had no track record on, that they had just met that day, and they used that mere allegation to go and obtain a search warrant. Under this court's precedence, that is not enough to meet the probable cause standard, and the district court erred by not suppressing the evidence that was obtained from that warrant.
I viewed our law on when corroboration was necessary for informants to be kind of on a spectrum based on how much was disclosed about the informant. So not a lot of corroboration was necessary if the name was mentioned in the affidavit. Maybe a little more was necessary if it was a confidential informant, and then maybe significantly more was necessary if it was an anonymous source. Here, the informant was named in the affidavit, which would suggest that not a lot of corroboration is necessary under our law. So I guess my question for you is, are you trying to adjust the law to suggest that when the person who is named is also implicated in criminal activity, that more should be required?
No, Your Honor, we're not trying to change the law at all. We think that the law in this circuit is very clear that we do agree that there is this spectrum. We cite the Florida versus JL case, which is a Supreme Court case that talks about that spectrum and, you know, the anonymous informant all the way up to the paid confidential informant, and that there is this spectrum of what you have to do depending on that. But all of it is, even if we don't use the word corroboration, all of it is a statement plus system. So it's got to be more than the mere allegation. Even in let's take the far right example of, we've got a paid known informant that has been used multiple times in the past and obviously has a track record that police can rely on. That's kind of that one edge of the spectrum. Even in that case, there's still the plus, and that plus is that the courts have said, if that is who you're using, put that track record in the affidavit for the application for search warrant, so the magistrate knows that there is this track record and they can be relied upon. So it's always a plus system from anonymous all the way up. And so in this case, what we're suggesting is, when you have someone who comes in who's been charged and arrested with a crime that police don't otherwise know up until that day and makes an allegation, then the police have to do something else to corroborate that person is being truthful.
Why wasn't the corroboration the officers listed in the affidavit that, of course, this individual was under investigation for child pornography? They seized the individual's electronic equipment. Isn't it corroboration that a significant amount of child pornography of the type alleged in the affidavit was found on his computers?
So that corroboration does nothing more than corroborate that Mr. Kosmiak is guilty of his offense, right? Because there was not an allegation that any of those 100 or so images dealt with Mr. Bryant in this case. And the timing of that is also critical, because in this case, they seized his computer. They looked through his computer, found 100 or so more images. Then they did the Miranda interview with Mr. Kosmiak, and he admitted, because they'd already looked through his computer, that yes, there's 100 and some images. And so he was admitting the obvious that they already knew. He wasn't giving them information that they didn't already have in hand. So it's to the extent that there's...
I guess it's something that's distinct from his own say, is the point I'm trying to get at, right? There's physical evidence that he's saying that he's trading child pornography, and you're not relying solely on his own testimony that he's been trading in child pornography. You're relying on the objective evidence that it actually exists on his computer, which I guess could be objective evidence to corroborate that, you know, he's trading with others, and this is just one example of it.
It is objective evidence that he possesses child pornography, absolutely. But the problem with this is when you, and I think this is kind of takes it to the point, is when you take exactly what happened in this case and you substitute the name Aki Heru for something else. So, in other words, let's say Mr. Kosmiak said, I've been trading child pornography with Governor Newsom from California, and they go to his computer or his phone and they see a connection with Newsom for Gov on there, which is the facts of what occurred in this case. You can be sure that police would not have taken that and went and got a search warrant for Newsom for Gov's handle on Discord or Twitter or something else. They would have done other information. They would have tried to corroborate that there was something else other than Mr. Kosmiak's word before they went after the governor of California for this allegation. And that's exactly what occurred here, because in this case, Mr. Bryant is afforded the same constitutional protections that the governor of California is. And that is the problem with this case, that the police didn't do anything to make sure that what Mr. Kosmiak was telling them was true, other than the fact that he admitted to things that they already had in hand and he knew that they had in hand.
Was his name revealed to the judge?
Yes. It was in the application for the search warrant, yes, Your Honor.
That's a factor in believing it. Once he's revealed to the public and said he participated in some of this.
It would be a factor. It's not enough. It's not enough because, and this gets me to the Abdullah case, which is a case that I cite too in my brief, and that's a case from this court from, I believe it's 2019. And it says that when you have an unknown informant, just their mere allegation is not enough to get you to probable cause.
Unknown? Isn't that critical? I thought that unknown
well,
means anonymous.
And so, no, there is a difference. So anonymous is different. Unknown is they don't have a track record. They're coming in off the street. There's somebody that is not.
I guess I would not have interpreted our case law that way. I would have thought anonymous, then maybe confidential. So that's the middle category of where they're not named in the affidavit. It just like says CI. We see those all the time. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you have to say reliability, but when it actually says the person's name, I thought our law was pretty clear and not requiring much, if any, corroboration.
Well, again, that takes me to my example, which is, okay, so let's say that's the law in the Sixth Circuit. So what we're saying is that there would have been probable cause to go ahead and seize Governor Newsom's accounts.
Based
upon just the allegation of Mr. Kosmiak and the fact that they wrote down his name in the search warrant.
I mean, we kind of already have cases like this in the drug context. We have a case called Pellman that I found. I don't know if it was cited. So I'll just the facts were somebody was stopped with marijuana in a truck. The person confessed that the person indicated that he got this marijuana at a particular house, and then that was essentially enough to get a warrant to search the house, because the person was named in the affidavit. I mean, why isn't that analogous? It's like, so, you caught somebody with incriminating, where'd you get this person's account? So let's go search the account.
If it's the case that I'm thinking of, that case is from 1986.
Yes, exactly.
And so that case predates a lot of case law that has come after that talks about the context of an informant, right? Including the Florida versus JL case that I was talking about, and the Bella case, and the Moore case that I cite too, which is a 2020 case.
Its analysis has been jettisoned in our court then?
I think that it's been nuanced since 1986, certainly. And it's evolved since 1986, and as it has in the Supreme Court as well, with regards to this matter. The whole idea of this, we can rely on somebody because they're coming in and they're willing to be named, and therefore that ends it, that gives itself an air of reliability. That comes from a Supreme Court case, Illinois v. Gates. But in that case, they were talking about the honest citizen. That was the language that they used, was the honest citizen. We're not talking about that in this case because Mr. Kosmiak wasn't coming in with clean hands at all. He wasn't the honest citizen that was coming in and exposing himself out of the blue to criminal prosecution. He was already in the soup. He'd already kind of dug his own grave, as it were, and so therefore he really didn't have much in the way to lose by admitting conduct that they already had him on, that they had already shown him
on. Does the Leon case survive this?
You mean the Leon exception? Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the alternative finding of the district court actually was good faith, right, in this case. And, you know, we argue that good faith, that not only can you not get to probable cause in this case, but that there are at least two exceptions why good faith doesn't apply, right? And one is that the affidavit was just so bare bones. The affidavit's actually, I think it's about 3 pages long. It's attached to record entry number 25 in the record, but if you distill it down, there are two very short two sentence paragraphs that deal with Aki Heru and them going to look for that. The rest of it is all about Kosmiak and stuff that they've already done. It's all historical. So the affidavit is bare bones, and we rely on that. But more than that, you know, we've made our argument that it also contains false information in it. And once a police officer puts false information in a search warrant application, they cannot rely on the good faith exception. And so the false information is the allegation that this search warrant was merely an addendum to a search warrant that had already been approved by the court.
I don't even know what that means. Is it suggesting that a search warrant has already been? It seems, if you read it in context, what the officer is trying to say is this is a continuing investigation. You've already issued search warrants out of it, and this is what we found, and this is a continuation of it. That would not necessarily be false. The use of the word addendum, I guess, is what causes it to be false.
It's a very odd statement in any event, and I see my time is up if I can complete my answer. You know, I've actually not run into it because I was thinking about it in the context of guns and drugs, which is what, you know, I'm very familiar with. It would be odd to me that you would get a search warrant for somebody's house, and let's say in a conspiracy, and then, you know, that leads you to another person, and then you get another warrant for somebody else's house that's also involved in the conspiracy, and somehow say that it's an addendum to it or it's a continuation. They're obviously not continuations because the Fourth Amendment tells us that it's the place to be searched that is the focus of the search warrant, right? Not the offense or not the continuing conspiracy. So it really doesn't make any sense from start to finish of that whole sentence. And obviously that wasn't even attached, even though they said it was attached, it wasn't attached to the search warrant application. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Christina Mahey and I represent the United States in this case. The government is respectfully requesting that this court affirm the decision of the district court when it denied Mr. Bryant's motion to suppress and request for a Franks hearing. First, the affidavit contained more than sufficient probable cause to support the warrant, and second, appellant failed to make the substantial preliminary showing required for a Franks hearing. First, I'd just like to address something that my opponent on the other side said about the timing of things. Mr. Kosmiak was not just telling police things they already knew. Mr. Kosmiak makes admissions to police as soon as they get there, before they search his computer. What the affidavit tells us is police knock on his door and Mr. Kosmiak says, "I know why you're here. Child pornography. I have probably over 100 images and videos." He gives police the password and username to his computer. At that point, he's transferred to the department, he's Mirandized, and a formal interview is conducted, but he's already made those admissions before police even get into his computer.
Give the password and access to the computer after he was presented with the search warrant or before?
The record's not clear on that, Your Honor. I would presume that police gave him the search warrant upon arrival, but the record's just not clear on that.
All right.
But I think the important thing is that Mr. Kosmiak is a known informant.
I had the honest informant, so I just assume that you have the spectrum, and I had the honest informant on the one side and the anonymous informant on the other. What do you make of the idea that maybe there should be a carve-out and that requires additional corroboration when he's not necessarily an honest informant since he's just confessed to having hundreds of illegal pictures on his computer?
Sure, and Mr. Kosmiak obviously isn't coming into this with clean hands, but everything we know about Mr. Kosmiak so far is he's been honest with police. He's given them a great amount of detail. Everything he's told them so far has been true. But I think what's most significant here is, and we see this in the Kinnison case as well, is Mr. Kosmiak isn't just throwing someone else under the bus. He's not just saying this guy was distributing child porn as well. He's getting himself into more serious trouble by disclosing his relationship with Akiharu. And that's because police already know that Kosmiak is a possessor and a distributor. They already know that from their own investigation. But there's a material difference between that behavior and what Kosmiak tells them, which they don't already know, which is, not only have I been looking at and trading these images, but I have been in this ongoing 2-month relationship with this person that I know has access to a 4-year-old child, is continuously abusing and producing images of that child, and I'm benefiting from that. They're sending me those images. I'm part of that relationship. And I talked to that person as recently as a week ago. Mr. Kosmiak, by getting himself into this greater criminal liability, I mean, he's treading into possible production waters there himself. So the fact that
The Akiharu account, did he just show the name, or was there any conversations that he showed? It wasn't clear to me from the affidavit.
Sure, and so what the record tells us is that he pulled up and showed that username and user ID. We don't know anything beyond that. There are two ways to support information from an informant. There's reliability and independent police corroboration. And as Judge Murphy, you noted earlier, where there's a great deal of reliability, it's a sliding scale. The court does not demand substantial corroboration. And here we do have corroboration, but we have substantial reliability, and we know that in a number of ways. First, although this was Mr. Kosmiak's first time sitting down with law enforcement, this was not the first time they had heard of him. They knew a great deal about him. He had been the subject of a 3 or 4 month-long investigation. And that's important because when Mr. Kosmiak starts telling them this story about this Discord account, police are able to check that against what they already know about him. And
Was this information put in the affidavit?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. The affidavit details how Mr. Kosmiak tells them, I met Akiharu on Discord. We started talking, that's where they first met. We already know that that's consistent with Mr. Kosmiak's behavior, that he's active on Discord, he trades child porn on Discord. Mr. Kosmiak tells them, after we started on Discord, we moved over to this other social media platform called Wicker. We know that's consistent because Corporal Backlett, the affiant, tells us, Wicker is a more secure platform. It's encrypted. It allows for auto deletion of material. He tells us that, child pornography consumers take steps like that to cover their tracks. That's consistent with what we know about Mr. Kosmiak. We know he's careful.
What do you do with your friend on the other side's hypo with Governor Newsom? Would this create enough evidence to search his accounts as well?
Thank you for bringing that up, Your Honor. I want to be clear. If all of the facts in this case, if all of the facts in that hypothetical were the exact same as in this case, but the email handle was govfornewsom.com or whatever it was, the government would still seek a search warrant to search that account. We're not going to, turn a blind eye to production of child pornography because there might be some connection to a political figure at any level.
Is that true of Nicolas Cage as well? That was the hypo in the brief.
Yes. I think the hypothetical in the brief is so factually distinct from the instant case that it's not really helpful. But yes, we're obviously not going to turn a blind eye to an actor producing child porn of a four-year-old.
What's your best case that parallels this kind of case?
Your Honor, I think both Pelham and Dyer are instructive here. Pelham, as the bench noted earlier, is a case that stands for the proposition that a named informant is given substantial weight. That case, it was a traffic stop. The individual was caught with drugs. Police said, "Where did you get the drugs?" And he told them the residence, and that alone was sufficient. I know that case is from 1986, I believe, but this court held the same in United States v. Hodge, which is a 2013 case. This court also held that statements from a source named in a warrant application are generally sufficient to establish probable cause because of the legal consequences of lying to law enforcement. Similarly, United States v. Dyer, which this court decided in, I believe, 2009, that was an unnamed CI, but they still gave significant facts. Their tip was detailed enough that not a lot of corroboration, or hardly any corroboration, was necessary. And so here, there is some corroboration. Obviously, he showed them the account. There's also corroboration that, we met on Discord. Corporal Backlett knows that's a platform used for trading child porn. He says we switched over to Wicker, which is another platform. Corporal Backlett knows that's consistent because of this encryption and these other factors related to Wicker. Corporal Backlett tells us he's seen this before in his experience. So those factors all corroborate Mr. Kosmek's story. Additionally, Mr. Kosmek is a known informant. He's named. There are legal consequences for lying to law enforcement. I know my friend on the other side tries to kind of hand wave that away and say, well, Mr. Kosmek was already in so much trouble that, what did one more thing matter? It really doesn't matter if he lied to law enforcement. And I disagree with that for two reasons. First, from a legal perspective, I'm not aware of any cases that hold that logic doesn't apply where you have a criminal informant. And I think we would have seen a case like that because probably most informants are criminals. That's how many informants come to the government's attention. But secondly, from a factual standpoint, even if the child pornography was more serious, I would think to a defendant, every additional charge, every additional possible sentence would matter to them. And for Mr. Kosmek, already being in trouble, he had to know that lying to law enforcement, making up a story out of whole cloth, sending them down this rabbit hole, chasing an innocent person, was not going to do him any favors with law enforcement or with the prosecution down the road. It was only going to make things worse for him. Mr. Kosmek had every reason in the world to be honest with law enforcement. Everything we know about Mr. Kosmek was that he was honest with law enforcement, and everything Mr. Kosmek said to law enforcement was consistent with what either they saw with their own eyes or with their pre-existing knowledge and experience. And so for those reasons, the government respectfully asserts that the search warrant, the affidavit, contained more than sufficient probable cause.
Well, what would you, and just switching to the Franks v. Delaware issue, how would you interpret this is an addendum to the already granted search warrant? What would the government take that to mean? Would you, suggesting that they're not really asking for a search warrant, or I guess it's ambiguous, and what do we do with ambiguous statements in the Franks context?
So I think the statement, if we just look at it in a vacuum by itself, it's not the clearest statement in the world, but I think, as Your Honor pointed out earlier, if you look at the entire affidavit in context, it's very clear what Corporal Backlett is saying. He is saying, we were investigating Kosmek, we got three search warrants into Kosmek's, his email address, his IP address, and his residence. Now we've got this information on this Discord account, and we're seeking a search warrant here. This affidavit, it had a traditional search warrant face sheet, so it had all of the required pieces for a search warrant. It wasn't just some kind of supplemental affidavit or something of that nature. So I don't see how a reasonable magistrate could have looked at that and been misled. Additionally, there's just no evidence of any attempt at deceit or trickery on the part of the affiant. I think if you look at the entire affidavit in context, it's clear what he's trying to say there. You know, as this court has noted, I believe in Pelham, you know, these affidavits are drafted by non-lawyers in the midst of a criminal investigation. Corporal Backlett is perhaps not as good a writer as Mr. Shad, but it's still clear what he's trying to say, and he's not trying to trick the magistrate or deceive them. And even if this court has concerns about that statement, the solution is obviously to strike the offending language. And even if we do that, the search warrant still contains more than ample probable cause. Thank you. If there are no further questions, I will rest on my brief and ask this court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a couple of matters, Your Honors. So I talked a lot about Mr. Kosmiak in the context of my argument, but I don't want to lose sight that the essence of this argument is police conduct and the lack of follow-up by the police and the lack of the police doing what they should have done to obtain probable cause in this case. You know, there's no question that at the end of the day, Mr. Bryant was guilty of offenses. What the exclusionary rule is designed to do is to correct police misconduct and make sure that innocent citizens don't get caught up in bad police practices. And that's the problem with what occurred in this case, and that's why I raised the Newsom for Gov idea with Your Honors, because with the amount of evidence that was involved in this case and what they knew about Kosmiak, the little they knew about Kosmiak at the time, he could have named anybody. And so what happens then? You know, even if it's a wild goose chase that they're on and they look at Newsom for Gov stuff and there's nothing there, you know, what does that do to his reputation? What does that do to, you know, his reelection chances? There's real consequences to society when the police don't do what they're supposed to do. And it was so easy in this case. They already had Kosmiak's stuff. They already had his password. They could have gotten onto his Discord account and found what they ended up finding. Because what they ended up, if you look at the federal search warrant, they show the conversations between Kosmiak and Akiharu that they obtained from Akiharu's, but they were also on Kosmiak's Discord account as well. They could have got there had they just done some things to corroborate what Mr. Kosmiak said to them. And that's why we think that this matter needs to be overturned. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you very much. And the case is submitted.